This is The Flip Side of the Record on KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds.
And I'm David Hyde. And 1 year ago, an oversized truck snagged a support brace on the Skagit River Bridge along I-5. The bridge came down almost immediately, and the news crews descended soon thereafter.
It was just after 7 p.m. when a major portion of the 57-year-old Skagit River Bridge fell into the rushing river below.
You see all of that smoke and debris, and then it just goes under.
I remember the fall, putting my arm on my wife's chest and saying, "Here we go."
Three people in two vehicles went into the river that night. All three were hospitalized for hypothermia. After the collapse, nearly 70,000 cars a day had to be rerouted around the bridge. And within weeks, crews installed a temporary fix. A permanent bridge span was installed just after Labor Day. The bridge collapse was called a wake-up call for the nation, or at least for Washington State. Now it's a year later, so how much has changed? Jason Alcorn's associate director of Investigate West. It's a nonprofit investigative newsroom here in Seattle, and he's been asking that same question. Hi, Jason.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So I think a lot of people probably remember from the time there were a lot of conflicting explanations for what had happened and why the bridge had collapsed. Everything from, you know, a trucker hitting part of the bridge to the trucking company messing up to the state not knowing that the bridge was in bad shape. So now it's a year later. What have you figured out about who was at fault based on your reporting?
Well, the one thing everyone is waiting for is the National Transportation Safety Board. They're the federal investigators, and their final report is expected to come out this summer. So there's a little bit of a waiting game that everyone's still playing. But right now, the fingers are still pointing at each other. There's still questions about whether the escort car adequately warned the truck driver when it had gone over the bridge, whether the trucker got forced into the right lane when it should have been in the left lane. And there's going to be a lot of litigation around this, I think a lot of people expect.
Chris Davis is a lawyer here in Seattle for some of the injured drivers. He said the state should have known that the bridge was in trouble because it had been hit multiple times in the past. What is he been saying, and what's the reality, or what do we know about the reality?
You know, he says that, you know, when you look at the history of the bridge going back decades, there are examples of trucks hitting that bridge. There's no signage ahead of the bridge right now. Washington State doesn't require signs ahead of bridges of this height. He's suggesting that, you know, the state has all of this data. The Department of Transportation does these annual reports of the bridges, and maybe there were steps that the state could have taken ahead of time to prevent this kind of accident.
And lawmakers in Olympia took this up last session. They tried to pass some new laws to try to make roads and bridges safer. One of the big issues was these oversized loads on trucks and kind of where they can travel, how they can travel, what the rules are governing that. What happened with the legislation?
So what the problem that the legislation was trying to fix was that right now Washington, if it issues a permit to an oversized load, an overweight or an overheight load, they don't really promise that the route that's being permitted is okay for that truck to drive on. That's up to the trucking company and the escort car to do. So the legislation that was introduced would have required, in a couple different ways, the state to actually certify or guarantee the routes that it was saying okay that truckers were going to be driving.
Hmm. All right. So right now, it's a year later. I'm a trucker. I've got this giant prefab house that I'm driving down I-5 from Ferndale. I got to cross the Nooksack, the Skagit River, the Stillaguamish River. What am I supposed to do, according to the state?
So the first thing you might want to do is find a local escort car driver.
Get a hat. I thought you were going to say get a hat.
Get a hat. Right. Put the hat on, honk your horn a couple times, and wave to everyone as you drive by. And, you know, what you're going to do is figure out where you want to go. So you're going to look at your map and say, I have to get from point A to point B. And then the Department of Transportation has a database of all of the bridges between those two spots. So you're going to figure that out. But then you have to open up another file, a list of all the bridges with their heights, and make sure that the route that you want to take doesn't include any of those bridges that have heights lower than the load that you're going to try to take.
It sounds hard. Are truckers actually doing that?
You know, the stats are good. You know, most truckers are really safe. I think that that's important to say. But there's the Department of Transportation is trying to make this better. And almost immediately after the bridge collapse, the Department of Transportation started working with industry to put together a new tool. And that mapping tool is going to be piloted this summer and coming out late this year.
What's the mapping tool going to look like?
It's going to be a way for trucking companies to actually go online and figure out the route that they're going to take and the bridges on that route and all the information about those bridges all in one place.
So without the NTSB investigation, they know there's enough of a problem that they're making at least a short-term fix. What about a long-term fix?
And the long-term fix that people seem to be really excited about is, when I drive in my car, I have my, I follow my iPhone and the maps, talk to me as I'm driving around that says, get off at the exit in 500 feet. The long-term fix here is the same kind of thing, but for truckers. So if I'm a trucker, if you're your trucker driving down the road,
yes,
and you're coming up to the bridge, it's going to say, make sure you're in the left lane in a mile and a half because that bridge up there on the right lane is shorter than your truck is, or it might blast a warning. And I think that's what long-term fix here might be.
Are you going to still need the escort car at that point?
You will still need an escort car. There's a lot that an escort car does. Sorry. Like clear traffic around you to make sure that there's enough space for you to maneuver like you need to in a big rig that may be 70 or 80 feet long.
Any sense at this point how we compare to other states in terms of how safe we are, how not safe we are?
Well, the numbers are Washington issues about 860,000 permits, and this is going back to about 2008. And over that time, there have been just over 100 bridge collisions of those permits. So it's pretty safe, but there are states that do a better job tracking statistics. Washington State is not the best there by any means. And, this issue of Washington State doesn't actually certify these routes, and there are some states that do so.
How about just in terms of infrastructure, safety of bridges?
Sure. Washington State is kind of in the middle. The infrastructure, we have major problems with some of our infrastructure, and that's the transportation package that's gotten hung up the last couple of years in the legislature. The Skagit Bridge wasn't one of those. It wasn't on anybody's list of bad bridges that we needed to fix, but there are other bridges in the state that certainly need a lot of help.
All right. Jason Alcorn, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
He's Associate Director of Investigate West. That's a nonprofit investigative newsroom here in Seattle, telling us about the Skagit River Bridge collapse on the one-year anniversary of that event. You're listening to The Record on KUOW with Ross Reynolds. I'm David Hyde.